Toyota. We just went out of another long meeting, so we are trying to change gadgets and everything. But having said that, everyone is most welcome to this particular meeting, which is very limited in time for internal reasons in Parliament. I hope you will understand that. I'd like to welcome you once more. And I've been just trying to juggle and find out. I was given a list of who is coming and who is leading the team. I guess who is leading them, then we can hand over to them very quickly so that we can make the introduction. Yeah. And they are most welcome. You help with that quickly. You disappeared.
It is Mr. Angel, CEO of Subcultures, Mr. Leon, Senior Vice President of Marketing, Ms. Jenny Murray, the General Manager for Corporate Affairs, and Ms.
Thank you so much, Carol, sir, and to the Toyota delegation led by the CEO. You are most welcome. This is the subcommittee on the Portfolio Committee on Transport. I'm sure you have heard the brief. However, it is important that I highlight that our purpose here is more inquisitorial. I hope that English is fine. We want to gather more information relating to the report of the public protector on the illegal conversion of panel vans into minibus taxis and other kinds of vehicles. Toyota has been mentioned, and therefore, like many other stakeholders, we felt like it is very important that we give you an opportunity to talk to us. And I know that you have been given the brief or the framework within which you would give us that presentation. With no further delay, I would like to hand over to you, CEO and your team, to take us through the presentation. Thereafter, we will allow the members to engage with the presentation, and we will take it from there. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman. Mr. Mungo, thank you very much to you and your team, the subcommittee for the Portfolio Committee on Transport. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think there are many times in the past where I really appreciated the engagement and certainly very happy to have this discussion with you and your team. I think I just want to make a few introductory remarks, if I may, and then I'll hand over to Charmaine, who will take us through the answers to your question. And I'm very conscious of time, so I do hope that we'll have some opportunity to have some broader discussion and we can try and get some better understanding. Of course, this is quite a complex issue, and for Toyota South Africa has been extremely unfortunate. Many people's lives have been impacted, and of course, this has been very unpleasant. We met with both Thuli Madonsela and the current public protector over the last few years, Ms. Mkhwana, and obviously, there's a lot of detailed information in all the reports. And of course, you know that her final report was issued in March of 2019. And I just wanted to confirm with the committee that one of the items in her proposed remedial action was that we, and I just want to read it, the president or the chief executive officer, which in this case is myself, of Toyota South Africa, to take urgent and appropriate steps to consult with the Minister of Transport with a view to participating in stakeholder engagements aimed at addressing the problem and where possible assist in the identification and removal of these vehicles on South African roads and cooperate with the department in its endeavors. So that was one of the remedial actions. We did so just a few months later in May, and met on the 21st of May. The meeting was chaired by the DDG of Transport at the time, Mr. Mokonyama, and he had a very widespread group of people involved in that, and they went through all the remedial actions and how to take it forward. And at that point, there was no further request for Toyota to be involved. Then subsequent to that, the Minister of Transport, Mr. Mbalula, did ask to see myself and the team on the 4th of February, so just a few weeks ago. And we also had a detailed discussion about the situation, and he essentially said that he appreciates the approach and the support that we've offered, and has no expectation, sorry, he has no, let me see how I remember him wording this. Essentially, he said that we're not obligated in any way, but is there any way in which Toyota South Africa can support the remediation of this problem? And in that meeting, I agreed to further pursue that. And between myself and my team, led by Leon Turon, we are developing some support structure which we'd like to offer to the Department of Transport. So just in the spirit of being completely transparent with this portfolio committee, I wanted to let you know that that's where we are with that side of the process. If that's okay, Chair, I'd like to now hand over to Charmaine, who will take us through our answers to your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kebby, and certainly, Charmaine, you may take over from here. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Yes, thank you very much. I am going to attempt to share my screen, if you just give me 2 seconds.
Can I comment?
Okay, great. Thank you. So Toyota has addressed the questions posed to us in a very specific way, and I would like to talk through as presented. So I'm going to jump into question one, which is, when was the first Toyota Quantum panel van imported or manufactured in South Africa? So the answer to that is 2005. I will quickly move on to question two, which is the request for the number of imported and manufactured Toyota Quantum panel vans in South Africa since introduction into the market. So I'm going to move on to slide two. Andrew, can I hand over to you for the numbers and breakdown?
Yes, certainly. So I think without trying to create any confusion, we've gone to some effort to give you a very detailed breakdown so the committee can understand the nature of our panel van sales. So we have three different models that we've been selling since 2005. On your left-hand side, the panel van vehicles are the ones that we are talking about in terms of some illegal conversions being made to those. In addition to that, we also sold later with an introduction in 2014 of the crew cab. And then for the entire period, we also sold a long wheelbase version of the panel van, which was never converted to our knowledge to any passenger carrying vehicle. So you can see it's quite interesting if you really look at the details, but our panel van didn't perform particularly well considering that the long wheelbase vehicle was a far more expensive vehicle. And there's nothing too odd about the numbers, apart from in 2007, the numbers were a little bit higher than in some of the other years. But one would have assumed that perhaps the sales would have been higher than the long wheelbase, but they weren't. So we have 6,004 of the, let's say, the standard size panel vans that we sold since 2005 to 2020, and 10,000 of the long wheelbase and 624 of the crew cab vehicles. Thank you, Shane.
That's great. So I'm going to move on to question three, which refers to the recommended retail price for Toyota Quantum panel vans versus passenger carrier minibus vehicles for each year since introduction of these vehicles into the market or at least from 2005 to date. So we have broken down the various models per year. Andrew, would you like to go through these details again, if you don't mind, please?
No, that's fine. That's fine, Charmaine. I think maybe to answer what I think the question is, perhaps, Charmaine, would you like to scroll down to, let's say, for example, 2007?
Sure.
So if we look at the panel van price in 2007, and we take the first model, which is the petrol derivative, which has a short code of 13K, you can see that the price was 191,700. Charmaine, if you can now scroll down to the taxi price of that same model in the same year. So at that time, we only sold petrol derivatives, but we didn't introduce diesel, so that's why I chose that model. And that vehicle equivalent would have been the S64 short code and sold at 169,104. So you can see that the panel van price was significantly higher than the price of the taxi. If you then add the conversion onto the panel van price, of course, there would have been an even more substantial price gap between the two. Thanks, Charmaine.
Great. Shall I move on to question four, if we're all okay with that? I'm moving on to slide 16. And the question posed to Toyota was, under what circumstances or for what alternative use would Toyota approve quantum panel van conversion? So we have set out the process, and Michael Stocco, could you please go through this question? Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good afternoon, all. So I think maybe before I answer the question, I'd just like to notify the committee that the NRCS recognizes a number of bodybuilders or converters, and Toyota has no control or influence over the applicable regulatory compliance processes between the bodybuilders and the NRCS. However, Toyota South Africa has approved a panel van conversion to an ambulance for the Department of Health. And I'll just briefly explain the approval process. There's quite a bit of detail, but this is just a high-level summary of the approval process. So under 4.1, which is the specification, the ambulance conversion specification is given to Toyota South Africa Motors by the RT57, which we get from the Department of Treasury during the tender process. The specification is quite detailed, and it defines the ambulance requirements. In brackets there, I've just highlighted a few specific points like the oxygen tank, the size of the oxygen tank, the position of the oxygen tank, the type of the stretcher which is required, and the medical cabinets, etc. Once the specification is received, TSAM will appoint a service provider and accredited bodybuilder to convert this panel van into an ambulance as specified on the RT57. So once panel van is converted, there is some verification process within Toyota South Africa, that's 4.2. So TSAM will conduct some verification tests to confirm the conversion quality. This is to ensure that the conversion does not impact the base vehicle strength, but at the same time is to confirm that the stretchers and all the oxygen tanks that we've included are within our quality standards as Toyota. And then 4.3, there's a regulatory verification process, which happens parallel with 4.2. So parallel to the verification process in TSAM, the bodybuilder will conduct some regulatory tests as stipulated in the NRCS standards for passenger safety. These are not limited to the following, but they include seat belt anchorage tests, seeds plant tests, and there's also other material related tests which confirm the flammability of the material used during conversion, etc. And then 4.4 is the certification. So once 4.2 and 4.3 are done, as a manufacturer, we're happy with the quality of conversion, and the bodybuilder has confirmed the regulatory points, then we move on to certification. So the bodybuilder will submit the manufacturer's test report, which is the report on 4.2, together with the regulatory test reports to the NRCS, and apply for the vehicle classification to be changed from a goods carrying vehicle to a passenger carrying vehicle. And once NRCS has approved the conversion, and NRCS sends an auditor to the bodybuilder to check the actual conversion and to verify all the test reports and also the test method used for especially the regulatory items. Once the NRCS approves the conversion, and a new E-NATIS code will be issued to the bodybuilder, which enables the converted ambulance to be classified as a passenger carrying model. And the new E-NATIS is issued, as mentioned, to change the classification from one of them. And this is only applicable to specific conversions by that specific converter and not for general NATIS, for general use. Once all the steps are completed, Toyota can sell the converted ambulance to the Department of Health. Currently, we only have one approved ambulance conversion and one accredited bodybuilder to do the conversion, and we sell those conversions to the Department of Health. Thank you, Charmaine.
Thank you, Michael. So in the interest of time, I'm going to quickly go through the remaining questions, which brings us to question 5. When did Toyota first become aware of quantum panel van conversions in South Africa for use in the minibus taxi industry? The answer simply is in 2005, as submitted to the public protector. So I'm going to move on to the next question, which is, what steps did Toyota take to inform government, Department of Transport, DTI, SABS, NRCS, MIBs, the financial sector of these conversions, as well as the view of Toyota on safety of such conversions? So firstly, on 20 May 2009, TSAM issued a directive to the SABS, NRCS, and the DOT, clearly confirming that, and I quote, TSAM has not and will not issue letters of authority for conversions of Toyota quantum panel vans into Toyota quantum sesquicele or other passenger carrying variants. This is due to the fact that the panel van is a commercial vehicle and is designed to carry goods. On October 2009, Toyota confirmed or Toyota informed its dealers and other role players once again, namely the SABS, NRCS, and IVID, that it did not in any way support any illegal conversions. So it has to be recorded that Toyota continued to reiterate its stance from the period 2005 to 2009, to be specific, that it condemned the practice of all illegal modifications. A press release was further issued on 8 March 2010, wherein Toyota again confirmed that it in no way condones the conversion of panel vans into taxis. Therefore, it is submitted that Toyota's position has always been clearly communicated since the first incidents of illegal conversions being detected in 2005. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. And we'd like to convey that Toyota's actions within its control pursuant to becoming aware of illegal conversions certainly confirms that it strongly condemns such practice. Toyota took steps that were deemed necessary and within what was legally allowed to address. Toyota is not a regulator for the purposes of registration, as this view was clearly acknowledged by the public protector at the time as well. So we submit that the onus is on the DOT and the NRCS to monitor and check that the registration of these vehicles are in accordance to the classification of the vehicle. Regulatory and other primary loopholes identified were also submitted to the public protector at the time of the investigation, and that was also acknowledged. The bonus set out was included in Toyota's submission to the public protector in 2012, wherein Toyota further identified certain regulatory deficiencies that needed to be investigated to ensure that adequate guidelines and systems are put in place to prevent illegal conversions. So if I can just move on to the next question. What steps did Toyota take after learning that some of these converted vehicles were being approved for retrofitment? Firstly, a communication was issued to TSAM dealers dated 2005, wherein it was clearly stated that this modification is not acceptable to TSAM, and therefore the warranty terms will be cancelled on all vehicles modified. TSAM further issued a notice on 9 October 2008 confirming an extensive investigation being conducted and that illegal conversion shall not be condoned. Toyota highlighted to all stakeholders that the illegal conversions did not comply with standard homologation or registration requirements for the vehicle to be used as a commercial taxi. So it was communicated to all stakeholders that it did not endorse the sale of Quantum panel vans to companies or operators that seek to convert panel vans into taxis by non-approved MIBs. And all Toyota dealers were also alerted to this practice. In the interest of safety, which is high priority for Toyota, Toyota offered engineering support for vehicles that could be converted according to the TRP specifications. So I'm going to move on to the next slide, and I'm quickly going through the specific questions to address this in the interest of time, and we can obviously take questions afterwards. Question 8 refers to what measures were put in place to mitigate the illegal conversion of goods-carrying vehicles into passenger-carrying vehicles, or to ensure that such incidents did not take place at all. So the brief history is from 2005 to 2009, Toyota specifically communicated and actioned what was reasonably expected at the time. The expectation to do better in informing the public during the period was acknowledged. It was put to the public protector and it was acknowledged by all parties. Toyota is not in a position to consent to the general conversion of goods-carrying vehicles into passenger-carrying vehicles. And it's important to note that unless we obtain approval, we are in no position to give consent. Moving on to the third bullet point. In support of mitigating illegal conversions, Toyota ensured that it did not provide the actual manufacturer's approval documentation, which we refer to as the letter of authority, to the NRCS to facilitate and enable the registration of the conversion of the vehicles in question. And I think that that's a very important point to note. And it's also important to note that Toyota ensured that dealers were fully aware of their obligations, and the dealers are evaluated by the terms and conditions of the dealer agreement between the parties in place, so that we can ensure compliance. The dealers were also made aware that breach of their obligations in terms of the dealer agreement resulted in disciplinary action, which could also lead to termination of the dealer agreement. And lastly here, in general, Toyota continued to support in good spirit the DOT and NRCS with any queries raised at the time. So finally, the last question is whether Toyota has a monitoring mechanism to ensure that this practice does not occur. We'd like to note at this meeting that Toyota has taken every precaution and is committed to ensuring compliance with the legislation and regulations applicable and ought to be in place in ensuring safe and reliable transport. And Toyota continues to make every effort in its dealer network in ensuring that the dealers do not participate in illegal conversions and are continuously evaluated to ensure compliance. So I'd like to stop there, and that was basically addressing, in short, the specific questions put to Toyota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. CEO, are you covered? Is there nothing else you want to add before I go back to the members to ask any questions?
Thank you, I'm comfortable. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, colleagues, there is the presentation. Could I see hands? And I will identify, then we'll just take the questions, the CEO, and then you'll direct who responds from your team. So let's just take all the questions. I'll indicate when you respond. Anybody else, colleagues? I already see three, which I will identify now for answering. I see four. I will start in the following manner. Honorable Hunsinger, followed by Honorable Sithole, followed by Honorable Lawrence McDonald, and lastly, Honorable Noluchungu. In that order, colleagues, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the delegation of Toyota, Mr. Andrew Kirby, Marie Reddy, and Michael Msoko. having studied the Public Protector's report thoroughly, and also looking and investigating all sorts of other documents at our disposal, I would like to ask some general questions and specific questions that seem to be left unanswered from the Public Protector's report. So therefore, I would like to start on Public Protector's report paragraph 5.1.144, where there's reference to the refitment process. It is mentioned in relation to Toyota's involvement. And I would like to get an understanding of Toyota's position and involvement with regards to the retrofitment process and retrofitment attempts, which seem to be a project around 2010, which is like 10 years ago. Related to that, there was a technical task team appointed to manage and give expression to an attempt to legalize these illegal vehicles. So what was Toyota's involvement in this technical task team around 2010 in an attempt to legalize these illegal vehicles? You might be very familiar with the SANS 10267, which always stand central in terms of the homologation process, in terms of refitment, in terms of conversions. But NRCS and SABS in their testimonies and in their submission of information upon our inquiry was that SANS 10267 is voluntary. In terms of the obligation that we have, as a state, as a country, and with various agreements in terms of patent law, in terms of adhering in protection of engineering technical specifications, but MIB specification centered. How do you see the remark of SANS 10267 being voluntary? Could I get your impression or ideas or thinking around that? Specifically then, in terms of the retrofitment process, which I believe you are familiar with in terms of the top hat conversion the driver's petition conversion, the supply of the seat, all in all, also reflecting on the prices, and it's quite radical to see the price increases over years. One can't believe that vehicles had cost what they did at the time. But at 18,118 rands, the conversion could have been made. Now, do you see these conversion as adequate, looking at the frame and the structure of the vehicle, of the panel van, opposed to what a taxi is constructed, the rigidity, and the road steadiness in particular? You are very quiet in your whole submission about the involvement of TFS, Toyota Financial Services. It might be a different structure, it might be a different part, so please give us insight and understanding whether it is and falls under your authority and control, or whether it is someone else that we should speak to. But it was nobody else than Toyota Financial Services that financed vehicles, that financed panel vans, that was converted, and it left the sales floor after the conversion, bringing the new owner under the impression that this is a legal taxi. And I would like to get your reaction on that. Then some general questions from what you submitted in your presentation. I would like to know, Mr. Kirby, on the relationship that you had with the public protector over years in submitting information, in cooperating in terms of the investigation and the process, but then looking at the final product as signed off in March 2019, does that contain all the information that you feel should be known? Or is the information that you feel should have been in the report but wasn't taken up? My second general question is that your engagement with Minister Mbalula on the 4th of February this year, was this the first and any engagement with any Minister of Transport in relation to the panel van conversion issue to taxis? Third question, why and on what basis did you offer a remedial compensation? In the fourth instance, and it's probably more directed to Mr. Msoka, thank you for sharing with us the whole conversion and technicalities around ambulance conversions. We are quite familiar with what is necessary for the conversion in terms of standards and processes, but having known and being involved in this whole process of what is required in terms of standards and specifications around ambulances, why didn't you apply it to taxis? Your reaction, please. And then just in terms of the list and the price comparisons, you know just as well as we might know, it is the VIN number that shows us on the road how many converted panel vans there are of taxis. So it's a simple JTFH and a JTFP that shows us what vehicles are converted. So the real comparison should be in terms of those VIN numbers opposed to the table that you showed us. Lastly, Chairperson, I would like to know, referring to the parent company, Toyota Japan, to what extent do they carry knowledge of this regulatory failure, but also collusion of certain companies being involved in this panel van conversion? To what extent is Toyota Japan informed about this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinga. Colleagues were following in the interest of time. If a question has been asked already, please ask those ones you think have not been covered, because we want to get responses and engage on those responses. Honorable Sithole.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, we must thank the Toyota for just giving this actually uncompleted information. But because of time, Chairperson, there's only a few questions that I want to ask because some more have been asked by Honorable Amzinga. The first one, what I'm trying to check, did they get the information in 2009, 2005. And then, but according to what he says, they have a meeting with the minister this year. What now I'm trying to check, what happened after 2005, 2009, until this year, if they didn't meet the relevant ministers? What was the reason? And the other interpretation that I'm trying to check, the illegally conversion of this taxes actually was a chaos, because if you check the fatalities that happened in the country because of those conventions, actually it is shocking. So what I want to find out from them, did they have the full information? How many converted taxes were involved in the accident? And the other separate, and if you check the public protectors report 5.1 5.84, Mr. Van Zijk further submitted that Toyota South Africa become aware of the illegal convention on 19 October 2005, and subsequently issued a notice to all dealers requesting them not to participate in the conversion of panel vans into taxis, because they were aware about this convention. How many taxis were bought from Toyota after they have that information, if they can give us that breakdown per province, if it can happen? And the other chapter, if you can check that one, 5.1.85. However, the notification to Toyota dealers was not emphatically instructive, as it opened a room for manipulation, as it reads as follows: if a client require such a convention, we suggested that you explain the situation and consequences to the client, and the client must agree to the following. I'm trying to check the consequences. Is there any consequences that was actually put in place by Toyota for the dealers that were selling those panel vans? And then the last one, Chairperson, I'm trying to check that one, the if you check 8.2 on their report, Toyota is not in a position to consent to the generally convention of good. I'm trying to check Chairperson if they can explain that and unpack it. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sithole. Before I go to Honorable McDonald, I just want to get clarity, Mr. Kirby, is Mr. Msoko part of your Toyota delegation?
Yes, he is.
Okay, thank you so much. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just lower my hand so that I can comply to my Chairperson here. Chairperson, most of my questions have been covered by previous speakers. I do have one or two questions, and I would like to Toyota to give us a breakdown on how many retrofit kits were sold to the private sector and how many to dealers since 2005. This will give us a better idea of the amount of taxis that were converted. Chairperson, through you. Then, Chairperson, I would like to know from Toyota, and this is an easy thing, Chairperson, that they can find out for us. How many of the taxis that they sold, the panel vans that they sold, was the VAT recovered by the sales people or the dealers? Because it would reflect on their VAT statistics from Toyota South Africa. Because, Chairperson, a lot of people registered these vehicles as panel vans, reclaimed the VAT, used the VAT money to convert the taxis, the panel vans to taxis, and thus stole from government, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that is a serious, serious thing that has happened. And I think we must get to the bottom of this, because then Toyota and the dealers were complicit in VAT fraud. And Chairperson, I would really like to have a honest and straight answer on that one. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your indulgence.
Thank you for being short to the point. Honorable Nolutsungu.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also take this opportunity and thank Toyota for the presentation. I would like to know, besides your commitment to adhere to what you've been asked to do in terms of the public protector recommendations and the media releases and the communications to the dealership, what else did you do? Because here are your vehicles, your name is stated, we hear of accidents every weekend. Quantums, you know, have been involved in accidents and people have died. And there is an indication that over 200 accidents, Toyotas were involved in these accidents. What else did you do to protect your name? Most importantly, to ensure that the commuters were safe and also to protect the buyers of your product. There is a case here of Mr. Lucas Lusibe from the Northwest. In 2005, he traded in his fleet for 7 new Toyota Quantums. And these vehicles were financed by Toyota Financial Services, a clear indication that it moved from the dealer to himself. Mm-hmm. And later these vehicles were declared unroadworthy by traffic authorities. Now my question to you, have you done any investigation to establish if how many dealerships were implicated in this process and what action was taken against these dealerships? I think the issue of the connection, your connection with Toyota Finance Services has been covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nolutsungu. Mr. Kirby, you can hear the sentiment is a bit dissatisfaction, if I may sum it up. And I guess knowing my colleagues, they feel like there's a lot that has been hidden. You have been trying to play on the cautious side in giving this information. However, you have had the questions. I would like to give you an opportunity. If you can, in 5 minutes, if not, just slightly over 5 minutes, please, Mr. Kirby. I know there are a lot, but some I'm sure you can lump. Over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honorable members who've asked the questions. I think from the nature of the questions, I can understand some of your concern, but I can also understand the perhaps the misunderstanding of some of the processes and exactly what took place. There are obviously some detailed questions, and I'm going to try and go through high level to try and maybe just correct some of the understandings. Let's start off with, first of all, from Mr. Hunseng, who asked all about the compliance with the SANS agreements and what was our approach in supporting the retrofitment of the taxi vehicles or the panel vans. So our principle was very, very clear. A panel van, a chassis, is not adequately designed to be able to take the anchor points for the seats and the seat belts and convert it to a passenger carrying vehicle. The modifications required would be multiple times more than the 18,000 that was quoted to have a safe passenger carrying vehicle. So we did not support at all the conversion or the retrofit kits, or agree that the retrofit kits could then be further modified to be safe. What we offered was all our engineering expertise to be able to help with the assessments and the design going forward, but to be quite frank, that was never taken up. It was never taken up, but we were very, very clear that we did not support it. I'm not sure of the exact SANS specifications, so maybe my colleague Michael Sokol might be able to refer to that. And was the conversion adequate? Absolutely not. It was an unsafe conversion, and that is the point. That's the whole point of this whole issue, and that's what was so disastrous for us. I want to then move on to the question about TFS. So we're certainly not being quiet about TFS. Telefinancial Services is a joint venture between three different parties, and Telus South Africa owns 33%. So we certainly will, we can talk on their behalf to some degree. What I pick up here was that there seems to be a understanding that we can determine what vehicles were sold as illegally converted panel vans, and unfortunately that's not the case. In fact, Honorable McDonald asked, no, excuse me, Honorable Sotoli asked how many kits were sold. Zero. We sold no conversion kits. We never got involved with any of that. What was happening was a dealer was selling the panel van, then later on that vehicle was being converted into a passenger carrying vehicle. In fact, I want to tell you a personal story. I became aware that this was happening when I was driving around and I noticed a police vehicle that was a converted panel van, a police vehicle. That's the first vehicle I actually saw. We had no other indication that this was going on, because if you look at TFS records, if you look at our sales records, none of the vehicles were ever converted. So what was happening, unfortunately, the Department of Transport issued homologation certificates, and on the homologation certificate it still says this was a panel van. So there was no way in which we can answer some of these questions. We don't know. We sold no kits, and certainly in our records there was no VAT fraud. If there was VAT fraud, it was on behalf of the customer. The customer bought the vehicle without paying VAT and then converted it to a passenger carrying vehicle, not on behalf of the dealer. So I just want to correct that kind of understanding. And so we can't tell, you know, how many vehicles or how many VINs, because if you look at even the TFS finance agreement, the TFS finance agreement still shows as being a power van. So, you know, there's nothing that we could do. We didn't have any clear indication that these vehicles were being illegally converted. Let me carry on. I just want to make the comment about, we have not had an engagement with Minister Mbalula, the previous minister, for many, many years. And this engagement this month, in fact, was around this specific issue. And we're obviously very cautious about discussing, because we don't want now there to be a perception that we are compliant or complicit, rather, in the illegal activities. You know, and it's very unfortunate that government was involved in designing a retrofit kit, in issuing the illegal homologation certificates, and the poor customer at the end of the day thought that he was buying a legal vehicle when in fact he wasn't. But the minister said, just from a corporate citizen point of view, is there anything we can do to help? And so we tried to find if there is some way in which we can support. And we think the process of scrapping the vehicles is the only process that can be undertaken. You can't retrofit those vehicles. The costs are astronomical. And so how do we support in some way the scrapping of the legal panel vans? And can we in some way find a way of getting those customers out of the panel vans into a proper, safe taxi vehicle? So that's what we are investigating. Sorry, I can't read all my notes here. So just want to confirm that Toyota Japan has been fully appraised of all the investigations and all the discussions with the public protectors and the final findings. And they, in fact, at the beginning, were not prepared to give us any authority to support the conversion of the panel vans into passenger carrying vehicles, which is why we took that very, very strong stance. So we can't tell how many taxis were bought by Toyota. Of course, there are very strong consequences, and I can ask my colleague Leon Turon to explain our disciplinary process with dealers if we find that they were involved. So the last set of questions about what do we do to protect our name. Yeah, this is a big concern, and I want to maybe use the example of ambulances as an example. So we, of course, have gone through a rigorous process to support the conversion of a panel van into an ambulance, which only carries 3 people. So we can, through our structural engineers, design a viable conversion, and we sell those vehicles through to the Department of Health. But you need to know those are not the only ambulances on the road in South Africa. There's a legal process whereby private hospitals and private service providers can purchase panel vans, take them through to bodybuilders, and take them through to the NRCS to get homologated as ambulances. And again, we don't have control of that process. And we hope and pray that the NRCS is doing their job. So, you know, this is what exists. There are many, many conversions that take place in many of our vehicles, game viewing vehicles, for example. The process is open for bodybuilders to do that and to adhere to all the different regulatory requirements and prove to the NRCS that they have complied. We can't jump into that process, unfortunately. So I just wanted to make that clear. I think maybe if I can just hand over to my colleagues, Michael or Leon, would you like to add any comments in terms of specific questions around the SANS regulation or around remedial action that we've taken with the dealers?
Mr. Kirby, thank you so much. Let me stop your colleagues.
Okay.
I think the SANS one was more to get your comments,
okay,
which I'm sure we can find time. I'm just looking at the time. I don't want us to leave many things hanging here. If colleagues could confine themselves to what has been responded to, we really don't have enough time. But I didn't want to ask questions, Mr. Kebby. However, it looks like many things Toyota was not aware of. 2 things that I would like to ask, as I ask my colleagues really to be very, very brief. Were there any warranties cancelled because of these things we're not aware of? If so, how many? 2, were there any dealership agreements that could have been involved in these illegal transactions that you might have cancelled? Those are the 2 things I want clarity on. Colleagues, we only have very few minutes. We need to wrap this thing very nicely. Any person who wants to follow up on any question, let me see hands.
Chairperson.
My apologies, I've muted myself. I was saying we'll start with Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Noluchungu, last but not least, Honorable Hun Singer. Very, very short, please, colleagues.
Comrade Chairperson, apologies. I just have one comment to make, and Chairperson, I think Toyota is being disingenuous with us, Comrade Chairperson. I think if they really wanted to help us, they would have given us factual information. I mean, Toyota sells the seats. They sell a lot of the parts that are there. So they have sold more seats and panel vans that they have sold for than they have built. taxis are built. So they must have some statistics to tell us on how many parts they have sold that went to these MIBs that were converting these taxis. And
you're with the man of the moment.
Moving and blaming the NCRS and asking if they hope that they are doing their work is totally disingenuous, Chairperson. But I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.
Honorable Nolichungu. Honorable Nolichungu. Honorable Hunsinger. Ms. Carol Sir, am I audible? I don't seem to get any response.
Mr. Mangu, you are definitely audible. Ms. Nolichungu is still on the line.
All right.
I don't see Mr. Hunsinger though.
Okay. He might have rushed. The bells are ringing already. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's have a last word from you, Mr. Kirby, as we try and wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I, quite frankly, I take offense to being labeled as being disingenuous. That's certainly not our attempt. We answered the questions that were put to us. If there were other questions, we are completely transparent and open to answering any questions. Honorable MacDonald, I can confirm we sold no seats, no pots, no kits, or any conversions of panel vans into passenger carrying vehicles. Let me be very clear. There's no parts, no seats, no kits, no involvement with any of the converted vehicles. You shake your hand, you shake your head, I'm sorry, we were not involved. There was nothing sold to the dealers. In terms of warranties cancelled, Chair, you asked that question and whether there were any dealers cancelled. I'd like to just ask my colleague Leon Theron to expand on that, please.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Honourable Chair. From our own records, if we could establish which vehicle was converted, yes, we would cancel, but I don't have those numbers. We will have to get those numbers for you and confirm. The second point is on dealer cancellations. No dealers were cancelled due to any conversion because we are not aware of any dealer conversions. So, and we have a very strict rule when it comes to our dealer agreement, and we follow that rule accordingly. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Theron. Mr. Kirby, the time is always the biggest challenge here. Would you be willing, if we have to send you questions, to assist us with more information so that we can also give you a fair opportunity where you would not have answered things you are not aware of that we required answers to, rather than calling you to another meeting? We appreciate your time. You are busy, but would it be fair to ask that, should we send you questions through our channels, you'll be able to assist us. And thereafter, I'll give you a last moment to say whatever closing remarks you'd like. Mr. Kirby, over to you.
No, thank you. Certainly, you're welcome to send us questions and really happy to engage in further discussions. I must admit, I think I need to think about how to visualize and explain the process for how vehicles are wholesaled to a dealer and then sold to a customer, and what happens with the homologation registration process, and how that was different for these illegal conversions. I think that might just help us in our further discussions. And I'll consult with my team and look at perhaps how we can help to be a bit much clearer, in terms of our investigations and what happened. This is obviously very serious, not just for the brand, but for South African citizens, the commuters who use the vehicles, and the drivers who lost their livelihoods in many cases because the vehicles were taken off the road. So were extremely sympathetic to the whole process and, you know, have been involved with this for a long period of time now, almost 16 years. So quite difficult for us to maybe just in a few minutes explain, you know, our involvement in trying to protect the commuters and the owners of the vehicles. And certainly our interest is getting people out of the vehicles into safe vehicles and getting the owners out of these illegally converted vehicles into safe taxis where they can continue with their own businesses. So we are very sympathetic to the whole situation, and it's been a very challenging time for everyone, you know, with this situation. And we are certainly very open to future engagements and welcome to send us any questions, and we'll answer them as openly and transparently as we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kirby, to you and the whole team. Firstly, for accepting our invitation, preparing to the best that you could, and lastly, accepting my request whether you could further give us more information. We are truly appreciative. It is not our intention to cast any aspersions on Toyota, however, but to rather get to the bottom of this and make necessary recommendations. We thank you so much, and everybody who's been part of this meeting. Once more, the time is always not enough, but I think we have gathered something you will certainly hear from us. And thank you so much to the team that supports us. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you, Mr. Kirby, once more. And goodbye.